Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you along today as we visit with my old friend Jerry Apps. Jerry has a new book out. It's called Rochera Journal. And he describes seasons at their family farm in central Wisconsin. The book features 130 of Steve's photos of the farm, paired with some of Jerry's personal journal entries he kept as the farm evolved. And I want to talk with him about the farm, about his book, about the seasonal changes, and also maybe get into a little bit about how you might, not necessarily follow in Jerry's shoes, but tell your own story, how to preserve your history through storytelling. He has that book as well, and so we're going to kind of talk about both of them. And Jerry Apps, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Yes, thank you, Laurie. Always good to be here.
Well, I tell you what, I took a look at the book just to start with, and I thought, I want to live at this place. The photographs and your accompanying writing really make it just an idyllic spot.
Yeah, my son Steve, who was the chief photographer for the Wisconsin State Journal, of course, grew up on our farm because we've been there now 50 years. And he developed a lot of skills, a lot more than I have, in photography. And the book is, he's outdone himself, I think. I'm bragging on him now a little bit. With the nature photos, with the various seasonal, chronicling the seasonal changes, which is in itself kind of interesting. And Steve, for instance, Steve would go sit down by, we have two ponds on the farm. He would go sit down by a pond for a couple of hours just to catch a picture of a sandhill crane or a Canada goose. So those are the kinds of pictures that are in the book.
And it's absolutely wonderful. What inspired you to put this together?
Well, it goes back to way back to when we first acquired the farm in, 50 years ago, 1966. And one of the things that I have done for a very long time, I teach creative writing. A lot of people know this. I've done that for 45 years now.
Oh.
But I encourage my students to keep journals. And I, of course, am a journal keeper, and I have been for years. And one of the things that I did when we acquired this farm in 1966 was to begin keeping regular journal entries about what was going on there. The animals that we saw, we started a prairie restoration project and how that progressed. I talk about the carnivore butterflies, the endangered butterfly species that we have, because we have about 3 acres of lupins. So my inspiration was to go back to those journals, which I hadn't done. I have 40-some volumes of these journals, by the way, to go back to these journals and begin reading in a way, reliving what it was like 50 years ago, 45 years ago. And as the years went along, I thought this might be interesting to share with others to see how a farm changes over 50 years. And that was my inspiration, really, for doing it, Larry.
And the farm is changed.
It was a worthless farm. It really was. In fact, the story goes like this. My dad owned a farm where I grew up 2 miles from this farm, and his cousin was in the county government and said to him one day, "Herman, we've got a piece of property here that I think you should buy." And my dad was 65 years old then. He said, "I don't want any more property." Well, he said, "We'll give you a deal on it. You can get it for $15 an acre."
Oh.
Because that's the back taxes. They haven't been paying the taxes. We want to get rid of it. We want to get it off the county rolls. So my dad bought 100 acres for $1,500.
Oh.
And then he gave it to my two brothers and to me for $1. So I paid, hold your breath now, 33 and a third cents for this farm in 1966.
Oh,
and it's right on the terminal moraine. People that know the geology of Wisconsin, many people do, realize that the terminal moraine is hilly, stony. There are pothole lakes here and there. And we happen to be on the part of the thermal rain where the glaciers stopped. It's pretty sandy as well. So this farm really was not destined to be a soybean dairy corn farm. It just wasn't. And the people who settled the place, going way back to Tom Stewart, who was a Civil War veteran, he homesteaded the place in 1867, and he tried to operate a dairy farm. In those days, of course, a dairy farm was 10, 15 cows. And I think he mostly starved to death because once he proved up, which was 5 years, he left. And I have in another book called Old Farm, I've traced the progression of the owners on the place.
It's really very interesting. And what did you do to the farm over time?
Well, I'll tell you the truth, the farm probably did more to me than I did to the farm. Wow. I need to put that out there because many people know, I spent 38 years working for the university and with the University Extension. So it was a place where I could get away from and I was an administrator for too many years. It's a place to get away from the challenges of my work. But one of the things that we have done, I run it as a tree farm. And every year now, for 50 years, we have planted at least 50 trees. 6 years ago, we planted 7,500. Wow. So we have about 100 acres of trees, and the rest of it's prairie, open areas and ponds. And we also have about 30, 40 acres of hardwoods, oaks, maple, all of that sort of thing. So it has a mixture of vegetation, but mostly we've planted trees and we've cleared areas. My take on doing prairie restoration is to allow nature to do it pretty much by herself. I help by removing the rogue trees and the invasives and that sort of thing, and I have been blessed to see a progression of grasses, wildflowers in my prairie that are almost every year something new. And I've planted nothing. This is the part that people don't understand. I really have planted nothing. I just...
Other than trees.
But trees. Yeah, I'm talking about the prairie now. Yeah. I haven't planted any prairie grass. No, we plant a lot of trees. We've taken out things. Black locusts have been a big problem. We had about 7 acres of black locust. It took 7 years to get rid of it.
Well, it's as I look at the book, and you kind of, well, it goes by seasons is what you do.
Yeah, it's organized by the seasons. And central Wisconsin, this place is, if anybody is curious, located about 4.5 miles west of Wild Rose in Washera County. And the seasons are pretty definite there. We clearly, most of Wisconsin, we have a clear spring, summer, fall, and winter. And I thought it important, and I keep my journal that way, to record what's going on in each of these seasons, because winter is so fundamentally and dramatically different from what goes on in summer, unbelievably so. And it might be 10 below zero. Compared to 90 in July, and everybody in Wisconsin knows that. But I try to get that to write that down, and not only just record it, but record what was going on then and what my feelings were toward that. So the journal's a little bit more than just a record of what was happening.
And it's kind of, to me, it's kind of in a way, it's something that I would look at if I was a landowner, a big landowner or a small landowner, and say, Jerry could do this. Maybe I can do this with mine.
See, one of the things that I'm encouraging, and this relates to my other book on telling your story, is that each one of us, wherever we're working, whatever, if we have property or not, it makes some sense to record the stories related to what's going on. And if for no other reason, the satisfaction of looking back at those journals some years later, now I look back, 50, 60 years, and see what was going on then and what I was like then and what was bothering me then and what was going well then. The other thing that I've done in these journals, and it's recorded in this in this picture book, as some people refer to it, that Steve has helped me with, is that in there I have, through my journal entries, shown how kids grow up and what they get out of relating to nature.
Yeah.
As the seasons change and as the years go by, it's been wonderful to see the kids who were, what, 3, 4, and 5, I think, when we bought the place, how they have, what they've learned from the place, what I've learned from them as they became acquainted with the place, and recording a kid's reaction to something in nature is a wonderful way of seeing what you probably wouldn't see.
Yeah. Yeah, I certainly would agree with that. And now you've got, of course, grandkids.
Yes, in fact, we have 2 great grandkids.
Oh, my goodness me.
I tell you, where do the years go, huh?
But they're enjoying it now, too.
Well, and I, some of your listeners will know that I also do TV documentaries, most of which have been filmed at my farm. And the last one, called The Land, features 2 of my my grandsons, who are, what, 25, 24, and 21, yeah. I think. And they, I was just amazed. One never knows, as when you're working when kids are around, grandkids are around, if they've gotten anything out of, that's a birch tree, this is a black oak, this is a white oak, you wonder, well, do they care? But I was dumbfounded on how much they got from those years of spending vacation time at the farm.
Yeah. Jerry Apps, our guest today, storyteller extraordinaire. We're talking about 2 books. You share a journal chronicling 4 seasons, 50 years, and 120 acres. Jerry has the writing in the book, and the photography is by his son, Steve Apps. And believe me, if you take a look at that book, you're just going to say, oh, man, what a place and what a life, actually. I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments. Maybe you keep a journal. Maybe you want to tell your story. I want to talk with him certainly about his other book, Telling Your Story, Preserve Your History Through Storytelling. It's, I think, a natural pair here to talk about. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or go ahead and post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Larry Mueller. Malik Anderson, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 1 o'clock today, Kathleen Dunn will talk about the pay gap for early childhood teachers. That's at 1 right now, visiting with Jerry Apps about his new books, Telling Your Story, and his newest work, Rochera Journal, Chronicling 4 Seasons, 50 Years, and 120 Acres. Join in with your own questions or comments. Maybe you've just got a general question for Jerry. Maybe it's about writing. Maybe it's about the journal itself. At 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Jerry, let's take a call from Portage. Oops, I lost the name. Hello?
Hello, it's Connie.
Oh, hi, Connie. Thanks for calling.
Sure. I wondered when Jerry's going to have another documentary or a CD out. I buy his, and I'm wondering when the next one's coming.
We are in the process of working on it right now. In fact, last week we spent 2 days working on it, and it will be available next March of 2017. And it's tentatively titled "Never Curse the Rain." It's about water. And my story's growing up in the dry lands of central Wisconsin, when my dad, on a rainy day, would always remind us, never curse the rain. I have a book by that same title coming out in March. So the documentary and the book will be coming out together.
Oh, great. Thank you very much. Sure. I enjoy your work so much.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks so much for calling. You get a lot of that, I'll bet.
I appreciate it, too. two quick announcements, Larry.
Tonight
at the Hotel Red, which is right across from the Fieldhouse in Madison, 1501 Monroe Street, At 7 o'clock, I will be talking about both of these books. And it's a project of the little bookstore on Monroe Street. And I'm not finding the name of it right now. Terrible. Anyway, we would like to see you come to the Hotel Red and learn about a little more about Rochera Journal and telling your story. Mystery to Me is the bookstore on Monroe Street that's sponsoring the event.
So that's coming up tonight.
That's right. This evening, 7 o'clock, June 28th. Second thing is, if you're interested in learning more about my work, go to my website, which is just Jerry Apps, all one word, JerryApps.com.
And you got Facebook up there. And
I got Facebook and Twitter, and I write a weekly blog, and I
you keep it going.
I don't know why I'm doing all that, but I am.
Jerry in Grafton, thank you for calling.
Hey, good morning. I have a question for Jerry. I have also written a couple of books, and I'm wondering, do you have an agent? Because I don't know how to promote. I'm not much of a promoter. Larry, you've had one of my books on a couple of years ago, Tales of Vegetable Putzer.
Ah.
You have another one sitting on your desk buried somewhere that you haven't looked at yet. And that's photos, poems, and a little bit of prose. But I don't know how to promote these, and I'm just wondering how Jerry promotes his books.
Well, let me start with your first question of, do I have an agent? I do not at the moment. I've been in this writing business 50 years now. I first started writing for money, which was a pittance, in 1966, so I've been at it a long time. And I have worked with, I think, four different agents over those years. And the most recent one up and died, which is terrible, because now I'm kidding. I wish he'd been with us, because he was doing well. So for the last 10, 15 years, I have I've not had an agent. And I do my own, I need to quickly say that I work with three different publishers, and each publishing house has a tremendously important and good marketing department. So I work hand in glove with the marketing departments of each of these publishers. The book Rochera Journal is published by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press, and they have a wonderful marketing department. The Telling Your Story is published by Fulcrum Press in Golden, Colorado, and they too have an excellent marketing department. So what do I do? Well, I do a lot of public appearances. I've been at 120 libraries in Wisconsin in the last 5 years, 120 libraries. I speak to local historical societies everywhere. I have started, since I've been doing this, I do television documentaries, and since I've been doing them, I've been doing more national work. I was a keynote speaker at a John Deere convention in Davenport, Iowa, where we had 5,000 people. I mean, what a bunch of John Deere lovers from all over North America. It was wonderful. So I do a lot of that, and that helps promote the books. I write columns, two columns a month for Country Today, which is a newspaper that comes out of Eau Claire. I write a weekly column for the an electric company newsletter, anyway. And that
REC newsletter?
Huh?
REC newsletter?
Yeah, that's the one. Anyway, they all of that helps with promotion, because all of these places allow me to have a little note that says, hey, if you want to learn more about my books, go to my website. I've just got a new book out. Look at this. I write this weekly blog, which has a list of where I'm speaking, and also has for the next 6 weeks or so. And it also, I may mention a new book that's out. So, and I write two or three paragraphs of not promotional stuff, just something about ag history, something about the environment, something about what's going on at the farm. So I do a bunch of stuff. I do a lot of radio. I've been doing a regular radio program with a public radio station in Barrow, Alaska. I don't know why, but that's kind of fun.
How did you get in contact with all these people?
What's that?
How do you get in contact?
How do you get in contact?
Well,
with
just
all
get
these
at it.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how. I've been at it for 50 years, and how did I get first started? I don't know. People have helped me. People have said, you ought to get in touch with Larry Mueller. He's got a good show on. and so I did that. I'm on Channel 3 Madison TV station tonight at live at 4. That's another way that I promote. So it's multiple ways of doing it. I do it on the internet. I do it through radio. I do it through television. I do it through public appearances. All of that accumulates, but it takes time, and it takes a lot of work.
A lot of footwork.
Yep.
So there you go, Jerry. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. I want to give Nancy a chance to join in. Nancy, hi. Thank you for calling.
Say one of the best programs is Larry Mueller, I have to tell you.
Thank you.
And well, when you mentioned up Alaska, I have a daughter that is up in Sitka, Alaska, and it's pretty interesting to hear the stories that they have just in that little area up there in Sitka. But anyhow, I want to tell you that I grew up on a dairy farm up in Marathon County. It was 160 acres, and my brother kept 3 acres at the end of the land. And there's a young family that's growing, is organic now on my dad's old farm. So that's kind of nice. And when I was a little kid, you know, we were, 2 miles from school. And the roads would get plowed in. We'd get so much snow and we couldn't, middle of 160 acres was our buildings and a long driveway. And we couldn't get out because the roads weren't plowed. And in the middle of the night, you could hear some noise coming. And what was it? It was a caterpillar coming to plow out our roads. But when we didn't have it plowed out yet, my dad would hook up the stone boat, which is what he used to clean out the barn in the afternoon. He put all fresh straw in there. He put a horse blanket in there. And we would climb in the stone boat, and over the snowbanks, we would get to school with the horses.
That's an absolutely wonderful story. And I hope that you have written it down.
Well, we've had a lot of... When I was 14, my mother was killed by a drunk driver. It was a week before Christmas. And then we had to have... I was the cook.
Some of the stories are joyful and some of the stories are sad. But it's the stories that make us who we are. And as I say to my writing students, when we forget our stories, when we forget our history, we forget who we are. So I encourage everyone to take a little time. I don't care if you live in the city, grew up on a farm, grew up in New York, it doesn't matter, grew up in Afghanistan, it doesn't matter. It's important that you get the stories down, because your family wants to know them, your kids and your grandkids, who may not at the moment think they want to know about it, but eventually they will. And I found that true in my own family. And then the broader family wants to know. It's the way of helping the world know that each person has made an important contribution. And a lot of my writing students have said, well, I don't think anybody will care about my story. My life's not been that important. Your life has been important. Everybody's life has been important. We're all special and unique. When people say my story's like everybody else's, it is not. It is special. And you should get it down.
And Jerry, and thanks again, Nancy, for calling. I appreciate it so much. It really... For Nancy and for others, your book, Telling Your Story, is really kind of I don't want to say how-to.
Well, it is how-to.
Yeah, it is.
But it's a lot more than that.
It's a lot more than that.
I spend a fair amount of time talking about why it's essential to do it.
Yeah.
And it's not just, here's how you do it, but why should you do it? I've got a whole chapter on why you should do it.
And I like the examples you give, other people's writing examples.
Well, I have my own writing students. We Germans aren't supposed to brag, but I have way over 1,000 students in my writing classes in the last 40-some years. And this book has a number of their stories.
And it's, which really adds, I think, to the whole thing, to be able to, all right, here's kind of how you do it, and here's an example.
Yeah, well, and these are just ordinary folks who come to my writing classes, some reluctantly because their kids want to hear their stories. And I love the reluctant learners. They sit there with a grimace on their face like, why am I here, and I dare you to teach me something. I love that.
But by the end.
By the end, I've yet to fail.
Oh, man. Well, Jody in Waupaca is up next. Hi, Jody. Thanks for calling.
Hi. How are you, Larry?
Great. And, appreciate your call.
Well, good. And I love your show also. And Gary Epps, my daughter and I love you. We love listening to you and watching your documentaries. I live on a farm close to King. It was built in 1865. It was called Oak Acres. Mr. Fred Jensen and his family, and a Chauncey Boyce, who, if you're familiar with Waupaca, there's Foxfire. His dairy farm was across on Foxfire. Those two men raised all the milk that took it down to the veterans' home for the Civil War vets.
Oh, my gosh.
That's a great
yes.
That's a wonderful
story.
And
I've lived here on this farm since 1970. I moved here from South America. Hadn't seen snow. My dad brought us here. But I love this farm. We still have 100 acres of it. And we rent out on the backside to our neighbor who has a farmer's market. So he raises all his sweet corn and stuff on the farm. But I, too, love the farm. I'm on the tractor all the time, mowing, trying to keep it going. So, but Gary, kudos to you. And I will try to write my story.
Oh, you should.
Yeah, thank you.
You really should.
Yeah, Waupaca was our nearest big city when I was growing up.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah, it was. We were like 50 miles away or so.
There we go. Thank you so much for that. And please do, Jody, write that down. And the earlier story of the farm, I think, is really interesting. Really, really interesting. Yeah. So I'd follow up. Let's sign up for one of Jerry. Are you teaching again this year, by the way?
Yes. I just finished a day-long writing class at the at Wild Rose Library. We had a full house. And then, let's see, August, I think it's the 11th, I'm teaching at The Clearing in Door County, a day-long writing workshop. I've been there for 26 years now. It may be full. I heard from them last week. There were two slots left in that writing workshop. So I still struggle along with the writing. I love them. I love to do the teaching.
Dennis in Berlin, it's your turn. Hi, Dennis. Thanks for calling.
Hi. One of the memories I have from a farm, we grew up near Green Bay, and it was the day of the ice bowl going out to milk, and all of the water pipes were frozen. So I spent most of my day with my dad replacing frozen water pipes. And when you hear the stories now, apparently him and I were the only ones that were not at the Super Bowl or the ice bowl. So.
I've got to tell you where I was that day. My dad and brothers and I were ice fishing that day.
Gosh.
It was colder than anything. and we had a battery-operated radio, and it was so bloody cold, the radio died halfway through the halfway through the game.
I also believe, too, that any experience you have makes you who you are today. So you have to enjoy, or at least cherish all those memories, because they made you who you were today.
Well, and Dennis, you've got a good story right there.
That's an excellent story.
Thank you
all
so
right,
much.
You.
Yeah, I appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Maybe you've got an experience to share or a question to ask about writing, or maybe about the Journal. I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. And I really think switching just a bit to the telling your story, that book, you've got, why tell your story? What is a story? As I'm just kind of paging through here, ways to tell stories. I think we've talked about why tell. You've certainly talked about why tell a story. And what is a story is people don't think they've got stories, but...
I need to add, Larry's too humble to mention this, but he's one of the people that are interviewed for this book, and I have a little section in here on how to tell your story on radio, and Larry has some hard-hitting advice for those of you who want to do that.
Yeah, and how to appear on television.
How to do television, how to stand up in front of 500 people and not have your knees knocking. And yeah, it's all the stuff that I do.
Well, and I think just the whole business of putting a story together, you know, there's as you say in here, there's a kind of an arc to a story.
Oh, there is. And one of the things I encourage people to do, I would say maybe the majority of people are natural storytellers. I may be wrong with that, but I'll say the majority. And there's about 1% wouldn't know a story if they stepped in it. So, so I work with this other bunch, and those who are natural storytellers, I start my writing classes by simply having people write down stories. I don't say anything about how to do it, to find out who really can do it and who struggles. And then from there, I began to talk about, well, what makes the story? Well, it needs a beginning. It's pretty simple in a way. It needs a beginning, a middle, and an end.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't have a good beginning, forget it.
Yeah.
And if the middle sort of drags, you're not going to keep people. And if you don't wind it up at the end, people are going to be ticked off. So that sort of says it straight out. It's a little more complicated than that. But
And you write more about it as well. But it's... it's true. You've got to capture people's attention in the beginning.
Yeah, if you don't get them in the first two seconds, my advice, if you don't get, today especially, everybody's in a big hurry, if you don't get people's attention the first two sentences, you're lost.
Jerry Apps, our guest, join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. At the Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. Well, you've been able to incorporate into your own writing and storytelling so much. And I think, is the journal part of it the most important part? Or
That's one of them. I'm working on it now. This little different book, which will be out in a couple of years. I'm just working on it right now. It's called Once a Professor.
Oh.
And it talks about my years of working at the university. And I was here during during the demonstration during Vietnam War and the civil rights, and with tear gas twice in my office in one day. So I write about all of that. So that's another part, but that's all in my journals. That's why I'm able to write that book, because one of the elements of writing a good story is detail, not generalizations.
Yeah.
But detail, specific information. And by keeping a journal, you're able to have a record of that specific information. I remember generally what it's like to be tear gassed in my office. But by looking at my journal, I could remember specifically because I wrote down very specific things.
And I was here around that time, too, and I did not write that down and wish I wish I had. See, because you're exactly right.
What happens is that people think, well, I'll remember that. And you do. Generally, but not specifically. And a good story wants specifics, not generalities.
Well, let's go to Margo in Poinette next. Margo, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. Say, Jerry, I really have read your books, and they're great. And you've written about the barns and all the different other things, you know, horses and farming. And on our farm here, we've been here 50-some years. And I remember the time when the grass was too wet to bale, and so we had to build a silo to put the grasses in because we couldn't bale it. And so I was kind of interested in this bale, this silo story, and I thought, well, you might be the one that could research this and make it very interesting for people that don't know too much about silos, because as I travel around, you see all these different silos. And what's the story behind these silos? You know, some are wood, some are asbestos is one of them we had, cement, you know, and some of them have pretty little roofs on the top, you know, and knobs, and some have pictures on the top. And then from the silo, you know, we went to the harvester, and then we have the where we bank in into the ground, you know, silo types. And now, of course, we got the big round long snake silos on the ground.
One of the things you may want to do, I've got two two quite extensive discussions of silos in their history in two different books. Barnes of Wisconsin has a long chapter on the different kinds of silos, because I researched it a lot already. And the Wisconsin Agricultural History, which is one of my newer books, I have a section in there on silos. But people don't know about silos. They don't know about fermentation. They don't know what silage is. And so I have a lot of fun when people ask me, what silo, what's silage anyway? And I tell them that the French came up with the idea of fermentation, and they smile. And anyway, we Germans know about sauerkraut, and that's fermentation. That's similar to silage. Oh, I didn't mean to say that.
Well, I can tell you, I can remember reading about the agricultural engineering department at the University of Wisconsin and introducing silos here in the state met with resistance because of the fermentation.
Tremendous resistance. In fact, the Farm Journal magazine coming out of Philadelphia wrote an editorial telling farmers, do not feed your cattle silage. Their teeth will fall out. And all of the cheese factories will refuse to accept your milk, and how wrong they were, because we were desperately here in Wisconsin in the upper Midwest searching for feed sources for cattle in the wintertime, and silage proved to be one of the very important ones. And F.H. King, engineer at UW College of Ag in the old days, came up with the idea of the cylindrical silo, because the progression of silos went from a trench silo to a square silo, upright, square, octagonal, and finally cylindrical.
It's a really interesting history. Steve from Whitewater called to say that keeping a journal throughout life is like taking a picture of a tree as it grows. You may not see the changes now, but in the future you'll be able to see the transition.
Yeah, very well said. Very well said.
Very well said. And here we are out of time. Jerry, you've got... Let's go back over...
Don't forget tonight at the... at the Hotel Red, 1501 Monroe Street. I will be there at 7 o'clock talking about Rochera Journal and telling your story. And if you have a minute and you want to see what else I do, go to my website, www.jerryapps.com.
Jerry, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for being with us
today. You are entirely welcome.
Jerry Apps, isn't that fun? I always enjoy having Jerry on the show. And I'm betting he'll be back.
I will look forward to it.
All right. Oh, man. Well, we're going to talk with another writer coming up next, Reggie McLeod. Reggie is editor and publisher of Big River Magazine. So we'll be talking about the latest issue, which deals a lot with water and communities along the river. That coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.